the ladies just before the elevator, the men's room just past the elevator. We've unlocked the door so you can come in and out, make it a little easier for you. If you need anything at all, please don't hesitate to ask Larry, who's right now assisting someone with a technical issue, or myself, and we'd be happy to assist you.
Thank you, John. So what we might just do now is perhaps just go around the room and just identify your name and if you're representing a constituency, what constituency that is. If you're not representing a constituency, perhaps just the organisation you work for, and if you don't work for any organisation, then just identify yourself as being you in your individual capacity. So perhaps just starting on that side with Chuck. If you just want
Chuck Gomes, representing the GTLD Registry constituency.
Ross Reeder, councillor representing the Registrar constituency.
Ray Fassett with the Registry constituency.
Milwaukee Chongo, up in CUC.
Milton Mueller, commercial users constituency.
David Maher, I'm with the Public Interest Registry. I'm here with the Registry constituency.
Ken Stubbs.
Danny Younger, on behalf of the General Assembly.
My name is Matthew Resha with Dodd Jobs.
And you're here as a guest of the Registry constituency?
Sophia McKellar, I represent the private sector company that deals with systems integration. We're also involved in corporate governance work. And I am the non-com committee representative on that company.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Farrell, I'm the ICANN staff for the Genius of Policy.
So I'm Bruce Williams, I'm ICANN student policy counselor.
I'm Christina Rosette of Coming to Berlin, and I'm here for the IPC.
Kiyoshi Tsu with the IPC.
Kurt Prince, ICANN staff.
Linda Sanjali, I'm the secretary for the GNSF.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm Marilyn Kay, sorry I was out of my slot. I'm an elected counselor to the PC, and I'm the CEO of the small consulting company, MKade LLC.
Thank you, Marilyn. Okay,
Bruce,
so...
Bruce, is there somebody on the line?
Oh, yes, sorry. For those that are on the phone line, if you could introduce yourselves. I believe this... Do we have Greg Ruth?
Yeah, Greg Ruth, IOPTC.
Is there anyone else on the teleconference?
Yes, this is Brett Fawcett, Eli Cleaver.
Thank you, Brett. Anyone else? Okay.
And I need to make an administrative announcement. Lunch will be served next door in this little room, but we are charging you for it because I'm sorry I didn't stay home and cook. So for the lunch, for all the copying, and for all the drinks and support the center is providing, we are asking people to spend $20 US, and Glenn will give you a receipt. And it's on my personal credit card, so expect me to come look for you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, so what are the things I thought we should start today off with is just reviewing what the mission is and what the scope of ICANN is first, and then set the context for the policy development we are undertaking on new TLDs. So I assume most people in this room have read the mission at some point, but essentially it's to coordinate at the overall level the internet systems of identifiers, one of which is the DNS or domain name system, and in particular to ensure the stable and secure operation of that identifier system. ICANN's function then is limited. It's coordinating the evolution of the root server name system. The second point is probably most important for us, which is coordinating policy development reasonably and appropriately related to the technical functions. And so if we then look at what we're trying to do with this particular policy development work, we are basically looking at policy development work on whether to introduce new global identifiers. And then we're looking at sort of four categories. So we're looking at, firstly, the simple question, should we add more identifiers? If we are going to add new identifiers, what's the selection criteria for choosing those? what happens if we have some sort of conflict, if more than one person wants the same identifier, or maybe we only allow a certain number of identifiers to be introduced at once, so that means we need to consider allocation. And then ultimately there will be some sort of agreement with ICANN for the operation of the new TLD, and what's the nature of that agreement, what are some of the key conditions that would be imposed on the operator of the new TLD. So that's the structure of this development process. And so then we need to be sort of then looking at saying, okay, well, we know what the mission is, we know what the structure is, then we need to just consider what are the...
Because you have that in paper in your... If you don't know that, you want to make notes on it.
Slide set, yeah. Yeah, so these are certainly, this is nothing new, these are just a slide version of what's in the bylaws. So then the core values are, as we mentioned, preserving the stability of the internet, respecting creativity, innovation and flow of information made possible by the internet, and limiting ICANN's activities to those matters that are within its mission, and delegating where feasible and appropriate to the policy role of other entities responsible for the internet. Then we, naturally, we're seeking broad participation in the policy work. These last two points are probably fairly important for this policy development, which is where feasible and appropriate, depending on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a competitive environment, and introducing and promoting competition in the registration of domain names, where practical and beneficial in the public interest. We need to be open and transparent in policy, need to make decisions for applying policies objectively. The last one again, acting with a speed that is responsive to the needs of the internet, and in particular obtaining informed input from those entities most affected. So certainly there are representatives in this room of entities that would be affected by anything we do in this area. And we also need to engage people that are outside this room and make sure that we're getting as much informed input as possible for this policy development process. Naturally, we need to be accountable for what we're doing. Again, another important point is this is predominantly rooted in a private sector activity, but recognising that governments and public authorities are responsible for public policy and laws, and we do need to take into account what that public policy environment is. So that's basically the core values. So at this point, I guess it's worthwhile us explicitly identifying what are the core values that are related to this particular policy effort. And so I'll just open the floor at this point for those that might want to comment on what are the core values I've just sort of gone through. People believe are most appropriate. I might just very quickly go around the room, so I'm making sure I'm hearing from most people. Marilyn, would you have any comment on the core values?
Yeah, I guess I do. I've been assuming that actually in any policy development, I need to explain the use of the mics. For purposes of your really being well heard on the MP3 recording, it's a good idea, if you don't mind, to take the mic, turn it on, green light, and then turn it off if you're speaking, so we don't get feedback from it, and also so we have no battery. For purposes of thinking about the policy we develop, I guess I would have thought that, first of all, we would assume that all the core values apply, and then we would be focusing in on perhaps those that we address first.
I think what I'm trying to identify is which do you think are perhaps your top three that are most relevant to this effort, and we just keep those in mind as we go through.
Yeah, I'm not gonna at this point give up on the fact that I think all of them have to be attended to.
Values, I think, are really critical. They may not directly relate to everything, but they're, I think, an underlying basis for everything that ICANN does. One of them is the enhancing of security and stability and interoperability. That's a fundamental thing. That's number one priority. I think probably that's the easiest priority for all of us to agree on. Number two, though, I think is also very important, and that's encouraging creativity, innovation, flow of information, and limiting ICANN's mission to those matters within ICANN's mission that require significant global coordination. I think those are the two that I would pick out. Obviously, like Marilyn said, all the values come into play probably in some way. Those are two very, very critical ones, in my opinion.
I sort of echo Marilyn's comments. I think all of these values are very important. But what's more important than that is recognizing that there's tension between these values and recognizing that we need to strike a balance between these values.
Ray Fassett, I actually echo Chuck's statement. I believe the first one is certainly one that everybody can kind of get their hands around and agree upon. Not to repeat Chuck, but again, number two is important, and I also think number three is important. I won't go through each one. Each one has certain things in it that I could agree to, but the first one is definitely definitely defines the core value that we all kind of agree on.
I think I'll go in the order that they are presented. The first one, the third one, and the third one.
And the which one, sorry?
And the third one.
Third one.
So the two, the first two one, probably the most important in my view.
I think there are two different kinds of core values here. One of them say what ICANN should do, and others sort of tell it what not to do. So when we're supposed to coordinate, we're supposed to preserve and enhance stability and security. Ones like number two tell us to sort of back off when other entities can do things better, or where we're interfering unnecessarily with creativity and innovation, we shouldn't do anything. There's also two of them that make a point of supporting market mechanisms or competition, which I think is critical in this context, since we're talking about essentially new entry into a market.
Well, I think between Milton and Chuck, there's a good balance there. So rather
than, you need to identify yourself.
This is Ken Stubbs. I think between Milton and Chuck, I see a nice balance there. So rather than just be duly repetitive, I'd say I'm comfortable with the way it laid out.
Danny Younger, I appreciate the fact that we recognize that there will always be affected parties in the process. And as the organization moves forward in terms of establishing a new policy, we need to keep in the back of our minds that our actions, like a pond that creates ripples when a pebble is dropped into it, we affect the interests of people in the course of our work, and we have to be cognizant of those parties that are affected. And when we know that our actions are impacting these folks, we need to bring them into the process. We need to bring them right in, let them have a chance to have their say, and let us know if there is a way that we can adjust, modify, or improve upon proposed policies to minimize any potential damage.
Matthew Gresha, again, I don't want to restate what's been stated previously, but be in agreement with Chuck and Ray and their position on the core values.
I think from the way I see it, all of the areas are pretty much.
Oops.
Hello. Oh, Sophia.
Yeah, the reason for doing that is just that we're creating an audio record that the staff will have to follow up. So.
Okay,
when they don't have your faces in front of them when they're listening to this, they don't know who you are. So.
And we need your picture for the Smithsonian.
All right, this is Sophia. What I'm looking at, I think these three areas are equally important, and they are actually complementary to each other, security and interoperability. As much important as global coordination is also important from the infrastructure point of view. You need to have a good interoperability for the global coordination, you know, to go smoothly. And policy making, of course, is an important a function in order to ensure that, you know, everybody is participating and are comfortable with what's being done. So, thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Maggie Mansour here with ISPCP. I guess from the ISPCP, really the first one is core to our functionality and our business processes, but really all three of them have a very synergistic relationship with each other, so it's hard to really pick out one, but if I had to, it'd be the first.
Kiyo Shitsu with the IPC. To us, the first value is of utmost importance, the stability, security, and certainty of the system.
Hi, this is Kirk Pritz from ICANN. The way I sort of see this is the core values on the second page are particularly applicable to this effort. So promoting global stakeholder participation, the first core value in seeking and supporting broad informed participation, I think is going to be a required result of this, especially when you consider the IDN section of creating new TLDs. And then I think our role here is to foster, you know, and depend upon and allow market mechanisms to promote competitive environment and to introduce competition. Now, having said that those were the three most important core values in answering the question, I think those have to be done within the constraints of what's on the first page, and that's, you know, promoting stability, limiting ICANN's mission and respecting the creativity and innovation of the rest of the DNS, and then using the policy-making bodies where appropriate.
Did we have somebody else just join the bridge?
Greg or Brett, did you have any comments on which core values did you think was relevant to this policy development exercise?
This is Greg. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't have a great deal to add to what's already been said, and the sound quality is actually rather poor, so I'm not sure I understood everything that's been said. But I would say that for the sake of the ISPs, we're primarily interested, our top core value is stability and security of the DNS.
Thank you, Greg. Brett?
Yeah, this is Brett. I'll echo what Greg said about the sound quality. I guess people are varying distances away from the microphone, so it's very difficult to pick up what some people say. From the UI perspective, we have considered competition, fostering competition as one of the primary core values that ICANN needs to further. And ICANN's been very effective at creating registrar-level competition, but not effective in creating registry-to-registry competition. So we've seen new TLDs as a place where ICANN can further that core mission and create a different level of competition.
Okay, thank you, Brett. Anyone else on the teleconference line?
Yes, just let's just do a little thing with Kurt, would you speak into that microphone right in front of me? The one behind your PC? Why put your PC lid down to do that? We're just gonna do a sound test and see if we can improve that.
This is Kurt.
Did you hear Kurt? Brett, we're just moving around some mics here. I'm just going to get Kurt Pritz to say something, and then just tell me if you can hear him clearly.
Okay.
Can you hear me? This is Kurt.
Yeah.
What we have is we've got quite a large room here, and we have one of those standard sort of Polycom conference things, which has only got the mic on the actual unit itself and a couple of remote mics, but it doesn't really pick up the sound in the whole room, unfortunately. I'm currently standing directly over the system, so that means you can probably hear me, is that right?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to move a couple more mics around.
Bruce, can we have our respect?
You need to pick the mic up and speak in.
Yeah,
you do that?
We have our respect.
Hold on just a minute, we're just going to do a couple more tests.
Hello? I hope you can hear me okay, Brett.
Yes.
This is a sound test. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so the other thing is the jack. Let's try this again and see if we can do this.
What, are we going to do every say we're going again?
No, we're not.
I have one more suggestion to make in addition
microphone?
To project.
Microphone?
I'm just making this suggestion to the room because it's a technical suggestion. I don't know where the speakers are that are projecting the sound, but we should try to get one of these as to the speaker as possible, because that in the long run will solve the problem almost entirely. We all speak into these portable microphones and put one of these close to the speaker. You don't have any issues anymore.
The speakers are probably in the ceiling.
They are.
Okay.
Yeah. Glenn went to find Larry.
Yeah. Okay, we'll just have to sort of work with the limitations we have. So I guess to summarise what I've heard around the room, I think from those parties that are operating portions of the internet, whether they're ISPs or registries or registrars, I think security and stability is a common theme there. There's also others that are looking for innovation and creativity, the introduction of new TLDs potentially providing further opportunities for competition and choice. Clearly there needs to be a balance between those two objectives, and as others have also pointed out around the room, it's important that we follow the principles of ICANN with respect to ensuring that we get as broad input as possible, and as Danny points out, making sure that all parties that may be affected by these decisions have an opportunity to comment. So I think that's a reasonable summary of what's been said. Okay. So
what do we want to do now? We've kind of got that covered. So we've made good progress here. And the next session was 10 for the presentation.
Oh, because we could go ahead and do the two speakers. I don't know if
we can. Actually, we could do the people that are available here might be the best way to start. That's with Danny, because others are scheduled for 10.
Yes, exactly.
Would you like to address your paper, Danny, at this point?
Sure, why not?
I mean, if you just move it on the stand close to you, it'll work.
Very good. I wrote a paper basically putting forward an analogy comparing the ICANN board in particular to a typical zoning board. The thinking was that we needed a reasonable analogy to try to understand how well our board thinks. It is a board that ostensibly purports to be open and transparent, yet we don't have public archives of the board discussions. So it's left up to our imagination to determine what motivates their decision-making processes, how they ultimately come up with decisions in response to policy submissions that are made by bodies such as this. When I started looking at the overall context of board decision making and came up with the analogy of a zoning board as a way to consider how they work, I started noticing more and more logical parallels. Zoning boards work in a very systematic fashion. For starters, when you go to a board, if you're a developer and have a major project in mind, obviously you come I's are dotted, your T's are crossed. And how does this, in fact, relate to the work that the GNSO does? Well, in particular, this body is in the process of putting together policy formulations that are based on terms of reference. Logically, then, we would expect the board, considering the information put forward by the GNSO, to evaluate it in the context of the terms of reference that were first laid out on the table. To me, this means that when a constituency is submitting a document for consideration, that if the terms of reference call for examining point number one, point number two, allocation methodologies, selection criterion, contractual conditions, that those elements are actually addressed in the paperwork that is submitted. Minor point, but I think it's a fairly important one. And candidly, I have seen some constituency submissions that have not followed that general approach. Some have actually regenerated documents that were issued 9 months to 12 months earlier and simply fine-tuned them without any clear regard for some of the considerations that have been put forth in the terms of reference. But moving on, another aspect that is important to a zoning board, and you see this all the time in current considerations, is thinking about what is going to impact the community that they're dealing with. When a proposal comes to their table, they're looking for impact studies. It could be an environmental impact study, could be a social impact study. But if you bring a proposal to the table, they want to find out, okay, who's going to be impacted, to what degree, and can we in fact move forward with this proposition? How does this relate to the GNSO? Well, specifically, the board has asked through its bylaws that when constituency statements are prepared, that each constituency put forward an impact statement. Not too much to ask. I'll just throw out a general type of example. If we have a group such as, I'll pick on Milton's constituency for the moment.
Not my constituency.
All right. The non-commercial constituency
Thank you.
Has put forward a position for appreciating the value of auctions. They are one of the only constituencies so far that has come forward with that particular approach. So clearly it would be important to know what's going to be the overall impact if a policy goes forward that promotes auctions. Will it necessarily disadvantage players that don't have the same degree of affluence, for example? Will it hurt people in the developing world? These are all considerations that should logically go into an impact consideration within a document coming forward from a constituency that's proposing a new policy. Another way of looking at a zoning board is that they are human beings and they'll make mistakes. I'm sure that I can, over the course of time, have made a few mistakes. But the important thing is to realize that as a whole, zoning boards, when they make mistakes, the impact can be large. We've got what's been referred to as the development of exclusionary zoning. Well-meaning boards have put together a way forward, but that way forward perhaps discriminates against people that are in need of affordable housing, as an example. We have to be very careful as an organization that we, through our processes, aren't inadvertently discriminating against groups that have their own particular zoning requirements. Now here a good example would be IDN. We've got a major portion of the world that says we have our needs. They have to be attended to. If we simply move forward and say, well, okay, we've got priorities, we're going to deal with the commercial world first, then you have an ongoing problem. It's the problem that was mentioned by Jay Halpin when he referred to Central Park. If you let the commercial world deal with Central Park, you'd have fruit stands and commercial enterprises eating up the entire park space. But the internet is a public commons. And when you think of it along those lines, you realize that you have got sometimes obligations to other sectors, sectors that aren't as powerful, aren't as wealthy, aren't as informed or able to timely participate. We have to keep those elements in mind when we move forward. If we think of ICANN as an organization that deals with a zoning type of approach. I put the paper together pretty much as a discussion piece. Just something to think about in general terms. I don't necessarily advocate a zoned approach. This was a food for thought type of paper. But one thing I do realize about zoning boards is that they tend to move forward slowly, cautiously. They'll experiment to a certain degree, but by and large, they're not inclined to accept the prospect of sprawl, blight. They want to move forward in a controlled, slow, and measured manner. And I think this tends to describe the board that we have and what they're looking for. So there are proponents that want 1,000 flowers to bloom. The General Assembly has many members that have that particular philosophy. That philosophy should be respected, but it's always a case of knowing who you're dealing with, how they're thinking. This is simply an admonishment to hone your arguments to your audience. And I think that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Danny. Questions for Danny? Go ahead, Chuck.
I think you answered this already, Danny. This is Chuck Gomes. But let me raise it maybe for a little bit further thought and discussion. It seems to me that this particular approach of zoning assumes a rather heavy-duty process for introducing new TLDs. Now, in the comments, there was obviously a huge variety of comments submitted on this, and there were those that advocated a very thin process, those a more deliberate, slow process, and highly involved. Am I accurate in my assessment? Do you think that this type of approach fits more correctly with a heavy-duty process than a lightweight process?
Chuck, good question. I think a better way of looking at it is a zoning board will typically have a defined process. It's important for all players to simply understand what that process is. The very first thing that ICANN was tasked to do by way of its memorandum of understanding is to determine the circumstances under which new TLDs would be introduced. At this point in time, I don't think we've come to a conclusion on that yet. And we are now 7-8 years into this process. So let's start with square one, define the process step by step. I think that's what we're all looking for. And then when it's out there, we can move forward comfortably.
Okay. Liz?
It's Liz Williams. Thanks, Chris. Danny, because all of my draft of the issues reported in the initial paper, I'm particularly interested to hear further discussion that will then be fed into the next version of the initial report, given that this is an ongoing draft. You said a couple of things that I just wanted to confirm with you. And it comes back to our discussion this morning about core values. What other sectors would you suggest need to be consulted, and how could that be done? We already have a process in place. We have public comment periods. We have calls for papers. We have a proposed meeting, a joint meeting between the GAG and GSO, and Wellington meeting. Are there any other suggestions that you can make about how we make that consultation broader? That's the first question. And the second question is, you said move forward slowly and cautiously. Do you mean in terms of the process, or do you mean in terms of the amounts and numbers of TLDs that may be introduced within that process? It's a very different question.
with respect to the first question, I tend to think that as we move forward, new TLDs will be proposed that will necessarily conflict with TLDs in the alternate route space. That means that there are going to be parties impacted by our decision making. I think it would be irresponsible of us not to bring those parties into the discussion so they are at least aware of options, opportunities, at least so that they can have their say. It's certainly possible that some entity might decide to bid for a TLD such as .web, and it may not be Chris Ambler. We have got to think about these situations. So clearly, I think there are people that are not at this table that should be called in to participate in future discussions if we move down the road. Beyond that, I recognize the fact that we have a core group of participants that are now members of the defunct General Assembly, individuals that are part of the registrant community, part of the reseller community, that aren't properly represented in our forward-going efforts. I don't know how you are going to reach out to them without an incentive for them to be involved. It's sort of like looking at the ALAC situation and asking yourself, why on earth should these people participate? What's in it for them? If at some point you start thinking about the GNSO broadly and you realize that in addition to the six defined stakeholder communities, there are in fact other groups out there that should be afforded a spot at the table, then maybe at some point we can address the non-inclusiveness. The second question, I'm sorry, could you repeat that for me, please?
Yes, you made a distinction between the speed with which new TLDs must be introduced, and you said slowly and cautiously. Did you mean the number of TLDs would be slowly and cautiously, or did you mean in terms of the process that would be a slow and cautious process?
Okay. I've had a bit of difficulty trying to get some answers from ICANN staff. A simple question that was posed earlier in the process was, since Vint has pointed out to us that there are administrative considerations, it takes staff manpower, resources to process a spate of TLD applications. I pose the simple question, well, how many TLD applications does the staff reasonably believe that it can manage over a set period of time without unduly straining its own current set of resources? I haven't received an answer to that question yet, so I'm not in a position to postulate whether we're referring to a large number of TLDs or a small number of TLDs, because frankly, to some degree, it's in your lap at this point. We need to know what your capabilities are, how much can you manage. With respect to the overall process, I would caution the board to put together a clearly defined process and then to move reasonably expeditiously, but in such a fashion that enough of the public is aware of what's going on and has an opportunity to get involved in the process.
Why don't you go take all the staff questions first?
Sure. Chris,
can you give
my... Who's got one of
those things?
Yeah, I'll move it.
That's all right. We're going to take over for you, Bruce. I don't want to be glib, but I think the answer to supporting registrants from an ICANN standpoint is answered through the self-funding model of it, and an oversimplistic analogy is registrar accreditations processing, where we if you've been following this market, and I know you have, there was a spate where we would receive over 100 registrar accreditation applications in a month's time. Each one of those applications comes with a $2,500 fee. So we were able to, that's not a very technically complex process, so we were easily able to, staff up with competent temps and, manage that process on a on an ongoing basis because it was self-funding. I would see the process, if once we have a solid process in place, the management of that process and then the ongoing administrative of registry liaison is also self-funding. Now it's considerably more complex because I have three microphones. Because the consideration of a top level registration is in a way more crucial. So that, but then the administration of a registry might be somewhat more difficult administratively and contractually. But there's also going to be more lead time built into that process because as we construct this process here, then I can construct the organizational plans required in order to support it. So, you know, there's two sides to this. One is technically how many TLDs can the DNS accommodate, and that's a whole different question. But from ICANN's point of view, I think there's time built into the process so that we can staff adequately and competently to accommodate it, and that it's in the end self-funding, so that would not be a constraint either.
Does that mean generally that you're talking about, let's say, 50 to 100 TLDs per year you can manage? What are we talking about? Round number. Nothing I'm going to hold you to, mind you, but just an assessment.
Yeah, I think, you know, 100 TLDs could be managed, but it would require the right amount of planning, you know, beforehand. It'd be a sort of different environment.
Just a comment for those people that are on the teleconference. We're just starting to get a bit of echo, so if you're not speaking, can you select the mute function, which I think is what, star 6? Yeah, star 6 if you're not speaking.
You've got to change the bridge.
It just cuts out some of the echo. Just a comment there, Danny, too, in your two things that you made. One about the GNSO. There is a GNSO review, as you probably know about to start. There is mechanisms in the bylaws to add different constituencies to the GNSO structure, so that's in the bylaws. One of the things that the review may do is identify whether the ICANN as an organisation should proactively add things to that as opposed to people just coming to us.
I and people like Jupiter Tierenstrom are very much aware of those provisions.
And the other comment, just on your question for staff, I think one of the things we're trying to do in this policy process is deal with, you know, should we have new TLDs, yes or no? What should the selection criteria be? Because the allocation method discussion partly relates to what's the resourcing issues. Because if the selection criteria is simply, fill in this form and you've got it, then the resourcing implications are pretty small. Whereas if the selection criteria is more your zone sort of approach, it's much longer, more complicated. Okay?
Well, I also think,
yeah,
for
instance, those on the teleconference, we're just switching to another teleconference line. This is a line that allows us to get other people to present their papers, and this second line that we're going to set up will actually be transcribed. I believe Glenn has sent the phone numbers of this second breach. If you don't have the phone numbers, then contact Glenn online and she'll email them to you. So at this point, we're going to close this call down.
But if you are just there, take the toll-free number for the States is 877-951-7311. The leader's name is Glenn Decentury and the passcode is GTLD. Okay, now I'm finished doing the call.
I'm going to ask you a question now. I'm going to jump in here. Nobody else is talking. You mentioned that we should be cognizant of what's going on with the root operators, or the alternate root operators, and that we should bring them into our decision-making process. Haven't they already made their decision? It's not that this is a new organization or a new set of processes we're embarking upon. And it strikes me that, you know, although we can let them know that really, you know, they've made their bed and they should be prepared to lie in it. That was, I don't know if that was a statement or a question, but you can probably give me some sort of an answer.
I've never been comfortable with the idea of having that domain. I know there are times when it's required, but I also know that when eminent domain is invoked, many times compensation is offered. We haven't looked at the possibility of harm avoidance or mitigation, and we are going to run into situations where GLDs that are selected by this body will necessarily conflict with those that are out there in the alternate sphere at the moment.
But you continue to use a word that doesn't make sense. You talk about conflict. I'm talking about the decisions they've made in their namespace versus the decisions we're poised to make in our namespace. Those are completely...
Just hold on a second. Also, just one minute. Let's just run
through. Okay, so you're expecting...
Mr. Eshi Josh Mehta, have you found out to him?
I will just check the call for you, one moment.
So I guess the real question I'm asking, is this a gating item for our decision-making process?
Okay, the operation is currently online trying to get hold of the contact.
You have got two numbers for him. So
yes.
If you can't get through to Mr. Ashutosh Mehta, then you can go through to Mr. Rahul Kul.
Yes, I believe he just have all that information. He's currently online. Would you like him to go and give you an update if he connects him?
Yes, please.
And
please connect him.
Okay.
And please announce him.
Okay, we will do that. And the operator will come give you an update if they have
any problems. And the call is being transcribed?
The call is being transcribed, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you have to join us live for the call?
Yes, please.
I'll join you live now. The line will be open and the operator will keep you updated.
I can't hear anything either. Okay, Greg?
Excuse me, Rahul Kul now joins.
What did you say? Hello?
Yes, hello, Rahul. This is Bruce Tonkin from the GNSO. We've now just joined the session where we're going through the papers that you have submitted. So I think
No, I'm still asking. I'm still waiting for
Okay.
Just hold on one second, Rob.